This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 78. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at launching startups, whether you've built your first one or you're just thinking about it. I'm Mike.
And I'm Rob.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. How are you doing this week?
I'm doing all right. Yeah, I got a lot of stuff going on. Well, we got about 12 days till MicroConf, and I just wrapping everything up. I realize we talk about that every episode, but it really is still a big thing on the list.
It's an all-time consuming affair is what it is.
It feels like it, doesn't it? But I want to tell you, I am cashing out, sir.
Of what?
I'm selling everything I have. $33 per free user. That's the going rate right now for apps.
Really?
You know where that's from? Facebook's acquisition of Instagram.
Oh, that's right.
33 million free users. It's a free iPhone app. 33 million people have downloaded it or are using it. I'm not sure which. And they got $1 billion. So how many free users do you think we have the podcast?
Well, I don't know, but they got to be worth more because they actually listen to it.
Yeah. So I know we get somewhere between 15 and 18,000 downloads per month. I just checked. We had about 600 gigs of MP3s get downloaded last month. So we're looking at, that's quite a bit of money. Even at like 2,500 listeners, that's like 80 something K. And if you go up to 10 grand, we could be approaching $500,000 here. What do you think? Would you sell the podcast for that?
I think your math's off, but
10,000 users would be $330,000. And I'm saying we might have more than that.
Oh, okay. It'd be a hard call, I think. You know, $500,000 would be nice, but it's still got a ways to go, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
I did read an interesting article that said that it could be Zuckerberg's last hurrah, though, which is where he gets to actually do something completely out of the ordinary and crazy, like spend $1 billion on a weekend, just kind of on a whim, because once he gets aboard and the company goes public, there's no way he's ever going to be able to do that again.
Right. Well, I heard he did. I think they have a board now. He did it without board approval, but right. I think once you're public, yeah, there's more accountability. Anyways, what's going on with you?
Last week, as everyone knows, I was in Calgary in Canada, and I actually sat down and had dinner with a podcast listener up there. So we went out and had dinner and had a couple of beers and just sat down and chatted about a bunch of different things. So it was a good time.
Cool. I wanted to give a shout out to Josh at codemyownroad.com. And he did a nice little write-up of episode 76, why it's easy to be great, but hard to be consistent. Yeah. So thanks for the shout out, Josh. Really appreciate it. And the other thing I wanted to mention is episode 77 in the comments, Mark Stevens replied, and he said, because you and I had said in 77 about how, well, I had at least said I felt forums were a bit old-fashioned, that they're kind of going out of style at this point. And he said, I was interested in your comments on forums as being a bit old-fashioned and being replaced by social media. Do you think if you can keep the question levels up, they are still a good source of SEO and also a way to differentiate your site? Do you really want to lose that to Facebook? What do you think?
Well, I think that what we had said was that forums are a little bit old-fashioned in terms of offering support, not necessarily switching over to Facebook or something like that, but more of the using email and some of the more direct communications is a little bit better than a forum for those types of things. Because I've even seen this with forums that are publicly available and you have a lot of activity there. What happens is that people will type in a question and they'll leave a comment there and, you know, they expect an answer from whatever you're running for support, and they will never actually go back and start searching through old answers to see if the answers to their questions are there, unless you're like this large company that just doesn't really get back to people.
Right. Yeah. In my experience, I've had forums on a couple of apps and they turn out to be more trouble than they're worth, or they have been for us. One of the like crazy things is that, as an example, PHPBB, which is one of the most used forum software packages, it can't be set up to email an admin whenever a new post is posted. There's just no setting to do that. So you have to go in and hack the code if you want to do that. And you can search online and see people complaining about this. But as a result, you either have to visit the forum every day to see who's doing what, monitor RSS. You know, there's really no easy way to monitor it. And so what you find is that you either have this net additional added task that isn't adding that much value to your business, or you have these forum posts that are not being answered because you're not watching the forum, and then people start complaining. I've also found that people, you know, if someone gets disgruntled or something, they want to come back and they want to, you know, post something to the forums about, oh, the support is this or the support is that. We haven't had much trouble with that, but I think once or twice in 5 years, someone's done that. And it's just like, it's not that helpful. Like, this person was actually what I would call a toxic customer. You know, they were demanding a lot more. They paid, you know, $90 for a $300 product. But that would be so much better just to handle via email, frankly. I found very little SEO value comes from forms as well. I think if you have some massive user base, tens of thousands of people, that's fine. But if you have 500 or 1,000 customers who've bought from you over several years, the odds of you having more than just a trickle of 2 to 3 form posts per month are very low. And so you can go ahead and set it up. But in my estimation, you're going to get a lot more value out of having a blog or even having a Facebook page if all you want to do is generate, you know, some traffic and interest in your app.
Yeah, I don't think that you'll get any SEO benefits at all from having a forum. The point that you bring up about using Facebook to get some SEO benefits, that's great. The comments that we had made were really about using forums as a support mechanism. I just want to reiterate that point, is that that's what we were talking about, not necessarily that using forums is a bad idea. It's just that using them for support kind of goes away. And I think that social media in general is probably better than forums.
That's a good point, is that we really were talking about support. The one forum package that I have seen work was the forums that were attached to Hittail, and they had tens of thousands of free customers at one point, and that actually had enough volume that it was ranking in Google and did bring in some traffic. So there was an SEO benefit at some point, but I've shut the forums down now. I was going to say, if you go back and look, but as I went back and looked, it was a lot of involvement from the previous owner in order to get that, you know, that stream going. And in my opinion, it's just there are more valuable ways to spend time if you're going to view it as a marketing channel. And then back to what you've said, it really, yeah, as a support channel, there are just better ways to do it now. So what else? What have you been up to?
I've been doing some link building for a couple of different products, and I just got a couple of the reports back from the company that I'm having doing that link building, and I haven't gone through everything yet, but one of the sites, I talked about it a few weeks ago, that I just kind of accidentally launched because I was playing with some software, the AltairisTraining.com, is on the first page of Google already.
Nice.
So, yeah, it depends on what data center you hit. So in Canada, I was ranked number 11, I think, and I've seen various places where I've ranked, you know, 13 or 10. I think that you said that you saw it ranked 7. I see it ranked 7 on my machine. So I don't know. It's doing well, and I've been kind of tracking the Google Analytics and starting to gain a little bit of traffic, and the site's up and running, and I've still got some work to do on it. But, you know, things are looking good so far.
Yeah, I've been running into an interesting SEO, I'll say it's a snafu with Hittail. There was a completely white hat SEO approach that used to work really well, and now it's being penalized. And what it is back, especially like 2005, 2006, people used to give out badges to websites. And so they would say, install this widget on your blog or on your website. And, you know, every page would link back to, you know, your tool, basically. And so Hittail had this badge they gave out, and it's on literally hundreds of blogs. And a lot of those blogs have literally hundreds of pages because they have a bunch of posts. Well, as of 6 weeks ago, having a lot of links from a smaller amount of blogs, so having 20,000 links from only 500 different domains, is now viewed as over-optimization. Even though it was totally, like back in the day, you know, this was a totally white hat thing that everybody was doing. So it's now resulting in negative rankings. I'm actually dropping in ranking, haven't built links, haven't done stuff, but it's just kind of crazy to see how this is changing. So I'm doing some evasive maneuvers to undo some of that, some of those links.
Right. I wish they were a little bit more, I guess I'll say, open about the way that they do those things, how they figure out whether or not you're the type of company that's been, you know, doing things that you shouldn't be versus the ones that, you know, were using it as a legitimate tactic.
Yeah. I mean, it's all algorithmic, right? And I think not even a technique that spammers use, but it's a technique that has a similar link profile to what spammers might do. You know, a spammer might set up 50 or 100 spam blogs and then just put a bunch of links on those blogs so that they have a high ratio of links to unique domains. And so doing this badge thingy, it's pretty obvious that the new algorithm is not looking kindly at that. So
yeah, I wonder how that factors in with products that you sell that are web-based, which link back to your site, like in the footer.
I know.
So
I would say that's a problem. I mean, because even with Hittail, it has a ton of authority links from big sites like TechCrunch and Inc. and New York Times and all that. So this is actually outweighing those at this point.
Wow.
You know, yeah, which is pretty crazy. But it absolutely started 6 weeks ago when the Panda 3.3 update came out. So we know it has something to do with an algorithm change. And, you know, these are the best guesses of the folks that I know who are knowledgeable.
Hmm. Well, good luck getting those badges
removed.
Thank you.
I'm going to need it. So, hey, the last thing before we dive into the main segment is a few episodes back, I said that I was bearish on mobile apps because I said, you know, as long as more phones are being sold, people are going to buy new iPhone and Android apps, but there's no recurring revenue model. And I have finally understand how apps are going to continue to sell stuff. Why that there actually is a quote unquote kind of recurring revenue stream for this stuff, and it's in-app purchases. This is totally obvious, but it finally occurred to me that people are going to start making, once you get a big install base, that those in-app purchases, whether they have them now, they introduce them later, whatever, that's going to be the gold mine in the years to come. It's being on the phones from day one, and then maybe over the course of several years, they'll sell them, you know, it's like power-ups, it's new weapons, it's new fonts if you're selling, you know, a word processing thing. So that's going to be it, man. And it suddenly hit me and I realized like, oh, okay, I can actually see this now as a sustainable business. So I want to amend my my bearish comment on mobile apps, and I do actually feel a little bullish about them. So today we're going to talk about 8 things you should give up. And this might be kind of subtexted as 8 things you should give up to be happy as an entrepreneur. This is based on a blog post that went pretty heavily viral. I think it got 5,000 tweets and several thousand likes and all this kind of stuff, but it's at purposefairy.com and we'll link it up in the show notes. The post was called 15 Things You Should Give Up to Be Happy. And it's, you know, not the most actionable thing. I mean, they're pretty, it's kind of like, you know, give up the past, give up excuses, give up these kinds of things. But as I read it, I totally thought like, there are a lot of these items, these give ups that apply to becoming an entrepreneur, right? And to making this work as a business owner. So the purpose here, this is another one of the kind of the mental aspects. We found that our podcast episodes that cover mental and psychological aspects actually resound quite a bit with people, because I know for me, it's always a challenge. Like every month or two, I hit some kind of mental hurdle that I have to overcome, whether it's a new challenge or whether it's something that I dealt with a year ago and is now resurfacing. In my life, I have done every one of these things we're going to talk about. And in the past, I was looking at it, in the past week, I've done about 50% of these things. So the first one we're going to cover is give up your need for control. And the reason that I like this one is it relates back a lot to what you and I talk about in terms of outsourcing and of giving up the need to control everything about your product. Especially as software developers, we really want to have every I dotted, every T crossed, and we want the code to just be magical and pristine mint and have our fingerprints all over it. But the bottom line is by giving up some control to someone else, and whether this is code or whether it's copywriting or whether it's marketing or whether it's, you know, some aspect of your business, you are very likely going to be able to move faster and achieve your goals quicker.
I don't think it's just about being able to move faster and quicker. It's also about getting a different perspective on things, because I'll do things or I'll have an idea about something and I'll hand it off to someone else to do. And a lot of times what I'll get back is, hey, have you thought about this, or have you considered doing this other thing over here instead? By collaborating a little bit more, you get another perspective that, you know, enhances your vision. It doesn't necessarily squash it.
The next one we're going to talk about is give up your self-defeating self-talk. Basically, it's having that self-doubt. It's having the voice inside your head that says, you can't do this, you won't do this, you aren't good enough to do this. There is a phenomenal blog post by Jason Cohen, and it's called Why I Feel Like a Fraud. And after selling, I think it was after selling his third company and, you know, having more than enough money to live on for the rest of his life and take care of his family, he wrote this post. And he said, I still basically question whether or not I'm actually good at this or whether it's been luck. And even within the past 6 weeks, this exact phrase has run through my head. Ongoing struggles day to day are going to tend to bring this kind of negative self-talk into your head. Some people, I think, are more prone to it than others. But if you are prone to it, it is perhaps the most important one on this list to get over and to learn to deal with and learn to kind of quiet that internal voice.
Yeah, I think that sometimes listening to that internal voice is just so incredibly toxic, because you'll essentially talk yourself out of doing something because you say, oh, well, I can't do this, or this is too hard, or it's going to take too long, and you kind of give up. And if you just kind of pressed on, then things likely would have straightened themselves out. It's just that if you don't kind of push through that, then it's just not going to happen. I hear a lot of people doing this type of thing. They talk themselves out of continuing, and it's they want validation from other people because they basically want an excuse to just quit and to give up and go home. And, you know, a lot of times they'll get that from people, which is, I'll say, unfortunate, but, you know, it's just the way things go. But if you don't let that stuff get to you, then you can at least push yourself through that and hopefully get to the other side.
Yeah, there's this phrase that I've heard. The phrase is, if someone else has done it, so can I. If no one has done it, I will be the first. And that really resonates with some people. And if it resonates with you, I encourage you to write it on a notepad and stick it on your monitor and read it every day. This is something, I have that quote written in my notebook. And as I flip through it, it kind of makes me realize that there's a big mental aspect to what we do, right? It's like the mental part, just like in baseball or in golf, like it can crush you. Once you lose your mental focus, you can seriously run a business into the ground even before it gets started, just by having this kind of this negative self-talk that keeps you from being productive. There's a school of thought. There's been some research done that in order to change a habit, you need to do it 21 days in a row. I think the idea with these give ups we're talking about is probably pick one or two of the most critical ones, the ones you feel like you're most guilty of, and 21 days in a row, set aside 2 or 3 minutes, either every morning or every evening, to just look at what you did that day that was, you know, maybe self-defeating self-talk, and to then turn it around and say, what is basically the opposite of that? Like, I am capable of doing this. Like, other people have done it, so I can do it as well. And if they haven't done it, I'll be the first.
You're not advocating that we look in the mirror and say, I'm good enough.
I know.
I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me.
I know. We're right on that border. I mean, hundreds of entrepreneurs that I've talked to, these things are prevalent in damn near everyone, you know? Everyone who I've talked to who's trying to start businesses feels these things at one time or another. There's actually another good post. It was written in the past couple of weeks, and it was by Erica Douglas, who has Whoosh Traffic. And she was actually talking about Jason Cohen working with him and how it made her feel like a fraud, basically, or her feel like she wasn't that great. That's up on her blog.
Yeah, I think the part of the problem is that people, you know, especially when you start reading blogs and you're paying attention to, I guess, that scene, what you find is that there's people talking about, you know, how hard they worked on something and, you know, long nights and long days that they put into something. And, you know, you look at that sort of stuff and you say, oh, well, all I need to do is suck it up and put in all this time and effort and then I'll be successful. And then a lot of people will put in the time and effort and it doesn't happen. And then thoughts of self-doubt start creeping in, like, well, what am I doing wrong? Is it me?
Our next one is give up complaining. I know that I totally fall back to this, right? It's easy to complain. It's hard to sit there and suck it up and to make a change, right? I have this phrase that's in my head I've never said, but it's employees complain, entrepreneurs shut up and get it done. And that's it. Like, that to me is the biggest difference between the employee mentality and the entrepreneur mentality. Is at every business I ever worked at, there was always somebody bitching, and typically several people bitching in a group about the low pay, the long hours, what management was doing wrong. Everybody had complaints. And the whole time I was thinking, what are you doing? Like, put that energy into anything else, whether it's the business you're working for, whether it's a business you want to start, whether it's to go home and put that energy into hanging out with your kids or to painting or playing the guitar. Like, that is negative energy. Turn it into something that is actually productive, because you're basically wasting your life complaining. It literally, it does nothing. Like, it doesn't help you and it doesn't help anyone around you.
Yeah, I couldn't possibly agree more. Complaining about stuff just doesn't solve anything. I mean, you just have to buckle down and whatever the problems are, figure out how to fix them. That's kind of the bottom line.
Yeah, and I think it becomes even more apparent once you're in charge. Once you start your own business, you realize the complaining is totally not helpful. The next one is give up the luxury of criticism. And what the author meant by this is giving a lot of criticism, like non-helpful, non-constructive criticism. This is a lot, I guess this is a lot like complaining, right? It's easy to criticize from the stands. I find that people who are good, people who do a lot of things, people who are successful, they don't tend to criticize others nearly as much as the people who are sitting on the sidelines, you know, working the 9-to-5, bitching about it, on Hacker News, you know, just kind of not actually being actionable, that they're wasting their time criticizing others. It's actually really easy to do.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to criticize someone for, you know, trying something than it is to actually get out there and give it a try yourself.
Right. And I find that the people who are actually giving it a try tend to understand then how hard it actually is and don't tend to criticize others. And it's not that you can't give constructive criticism or constructive feedback and say, hey, this is bad, improve it by doing this. But it's the people who just sit there and say, oh, they make a big, you know, funny joke on some online forum. The next one is give up on your fears. And we've covered this two or three episodes past.
I think we had a whole podcast episode on it.
I think fear is possibly the number one thing that keeps people from actually moving forward with starting their businesses. Next one is give up your excuses.
It's funny. I mean, some people might take this the wrong way, but I remember back in my fraternity days where the saying was an excuse is an admittance of failure. And basically, as soon as you start making excuses, it means that you failed because you're going to spend all your energy explaining why you couldn't do something or how you couldn't get something done because of all these other things. And, you know, you're going to basically point fingers everywhere except where the blame for that resides. I mean, it's typically with yourself. I mean, there's something that you didn't do. There's, you know, it was either procrastination or you just didn't work hard enough or you didn't place enough importance on it. As soon as you make excuses, you're sunk. I mean, those excuses, you just have to draw the line and say, look, these things are not real, and you have to point to where the problem lies.
And our last one we're looking at today is give up living your life to other people's expectations. There's a really good book written by Chris Guillebeau, and it's called The Art of Nonconformity. And if you're interested in kind of checking out what perhaps how we've been brainwashed into believing that a number of things, that believing that the 9-to-5 and the 1.5 kids and the picket fence is the way for us, even that a 4-year education, getting a PhD and teaching in academia, any of these things, how we've been kind of brainwashed into thinking that these are what we need rather than just things that everyone else does. If you're interested in kind of looking more at that, this book is really, really interesting. Chris Guillebeau has traveled the world, and his goal is to travel to every country in the world. And I think he's been to 150 of them by now, but he has some very unique thoughts on it. And it's a pretty practical book is what I like about it. He talks about kind of looking for your legacy and finding something that is not only interesting to you, but that is important to others, and that it can be kind of a something that you can work on perhaps for the rest of your life, and something that, you know, that you are passionate about and that brings you a lot of life. Because frankly, I've found that other people's expectations often involve things like you should take the job that makes you the most money. And I found over and over that entrepreneurs who leave their jobs and make less money, but they do something they really enjoy, are way, way happier than the guy who stays and makes 2 or 3 times what that entrepreneur now makes. And it's like, whose expectations are you going to live by?
Yeah, it's very much I'll call it a Steve Jobs-esque point of view. You can't live the life that somebody else wants you to lead. The quote from him is, remember that you're going to die is the best way I know to avoid the trap of thinking you have something to lose.
So in the past week or two, the ones that really stood out to me as the things that I've been doing are the give up your self-defeating self-talk. I need to focus on that. And give up on your fears and give up on your excuses. I think that negative self-talk and fears and excuses are probably the three most recurring themes that I've seen in my life as I've, you know, been building businesses for the past 12 or 13 years.
I think for mine, I'd have to say giving up the need for control and then fears and excuses. So definitely, you know, overlap 2/3 on that one. But
yep, I bet that's pretty common.
Yeah, for me on the giving up control, I mean, I think I'd mentioned a couple of weeks ago that I started outsourcing some stuff for Audit Shark, and that was a huge step for me, to be honest. We do have a couple of listener questions. The first one says, hi, Rob and Mike. Love the show as always. Rob has mentioned a couple of times how it was nice to get someone else in to help with tier one customer support. My question is, do you just give Gmail access to that other person or pay for something more expensive like Zendesk? My own situation is that I have several Gmail identities and domains all arriving into one normal Gmail inbox. Right now, it's just me replying to any emails. Regards, Owen.
All right. I wish there was one simple answer to this, but I'd approach it 3 different ways. And it depends on how many support emails are coming through. But I've taken 3 approaches. One is I will set up a separate Gmail account, just, you know, whatever, probably the business name @gmail.com. I will give access to a VA so they can log into that. And then I will use the SMTP capabilities of Gmail to go out to the support inbox. And, you know, it pulls emails every minute or 5 minutes or whatever. And then they check it once a day and they respond to it. And if anything happens and they forward me the emails, you know, if they need help. That is the simplest. It's free, but it gets kludgy pretty quickly if you have a lot of support coming in. So it's not scalable, basically. The other way I've had it done, Gmail now allows you to allow others to log into your Gmail account and reply as you, but they can't do any of your settings. They're like not an admin, right? They don't have access to everything. I've never used this, but that would be probably a very quick and dirty way to do it. If you were going to just go on vacation for a week or something, you could, you know, have a VA that you trust, obviously, but you give them access to your Gmail account. Again, they can't do stuff like change your password and change your settings, but they can reply to anything, so they could at least keep an eye on it. I wouldn't recommend that as an ongoing long-term thing, but it's another option. The most in-depth option and kind of what I wind up doing when there's a lot of emails coming in is I use Fogbugs. And that allows us to handle, it's basically a group inbox, right? So as new support emails come in, Fogbugs does an SMTP check, it pulls them in, and then it categorizes them and assigns them to the VA. If the VA has any issues, he can type it up and assign it to me. And then I get an email and I can log in and we can then track stuff. You know, some of these incoming support issues will wind up having 10, 15 back and forth responses between all three of us. He can reply, I can reply, we can kind of do whatever we want, and it's all in it's a well-organized flow, and you can see what the whole history is. And then you can, of course, search that later easily and you'll have access to it. I do host Fogbugs and it's $25 per login, although there is a 2-login free account. If you have 2 logins, you know, you don't have to pay for it. So that might be something to use for getting started. How about you, Mike? Do you use any different approaches?
Not really. I mean, there's one other one that I use where I'll create a mailbox that Fogbugs goes and looks into, but you basically have to set up your domain with that support email address first. And typically when I first start out, I'll just have it forwarded directly to my Gmail account. And that way, everything comes into my Gmail account. I don't have a dedicated Gmail account for it. So I'll use my own personal one, and I'll just create support at whateverdomain.com, have it forwarded to me, and then I can reply as that just by going out through that SMTP server. And then when it scales a little bit too much and I need to do something else with it, because that mailbox already exists, I basically just change the settings to no longer forward to me, and then just have Fogbugs or something else go in and retrieve the emails. So that way, everything's still going to the same place. I don't need to change anything else. I don't need to wait for DNS to propagate or anything weird like that. And I don't have to depend on some Gmail account that I may or may not remember to log into.
Right. Yeah. So that's actually how I do it as well. That's how I did it with Hittail, and that's how I originally did it with .NET Invoice. First went to Gmail, then went to Fogbugs. There's only a couple of very minor, smaller apps that I have that still have a separate Gmail account that someone else monitors.
Do you actually have it go directly to a Gmail account versus?
No,
oh,
no, okay. I have it forwarding to that separate Gmail account.
And just a note for the listeners, if you're going to do this, then make sure that you set up your account settings so that it actually sends email that is outbound for that through the SMTP server. You have to go over to the account setting. And basically what that does is it removes the...
It says on behalf of.
So you have to go into your account settings and change the SMTP server. It's all documented in their docs, which are actually pretty good at walking you through it. And you just set that up and it will remove the sent on behalf of whatever your Gmail account is. So that way people don't actually see that it's coming from a Gmail account.
All right. And our second question of the day is an audio question. Someone called it into our voicemail at 888-801-9690.
Hey, guys. Jack Coletti calling from Pittsburgh, founder and CEO of Qula, Qula.me. Just got finished listening to episode 6. And my question is there any particular blogging platform that gives you a little bit more juice Google-wise than others? Curious to know if there's anything about the technology or just the way the blogging platforms are set up that might be a little bit more favorable for search engine ranking. Thanks.
So, Jack, I think that the primary question behind that is what blogging platform should you go for to get the best SEO bang for your buck? And to be perfectly honest, I don't think it matters. I think what matters is the actual content, and that's going to matter a lot more than the platform, because most of the platforms are going to be fairly similar in terms of the types of things that they offer. They're going to allow you to change H1 tags. They're going to allow you to put in special URLs for the new posts or the new pages that you add up there, so that you can make sure that you've got whatever keywords you're targeting in both the URL and in the H1 tag and various other things. The one thing you do have to be a little careful of is performance. And one of the things that Google will penalize you for is for having a website that doesn't perform very well. So if it is slower than, 90% of the blogs out there, or it loads in 15 or 20 seconds or something like that, then you're probably going to have problems. And a lot of those problems tend to come from either bad web hosts or from misconfigurations in whatever the platform that you're using is, whether it's Joomla or WordPress or what have you. Raw HTML is probably served up a lot quicker than most other things, but at the end of the day, if the speed is reasonable, I don't know as Google is going to penalize you at all. The other side of the coin is more of the, I don't want to call it the technical side, but the time and effort that you have to put into it. And I think that that matters quite a bit. I mean, you can certainly do raw HTML and hand code everything, but I don't think that it's worth the time in 95% of the cases.
Yep. And it doesn't matter which platform you use, but what I have seen is that some platforms are surprisingly unflexible. And so if you can't modify the H1 tag, if you can't modify how the actual URL appears, like how the file name looks in the address bar, that should have basically the same keywords that are in your title, or you should be able to set those. Some CMSs do not allow you to do that. And so you want to bail on those. It's typically older ones. Also, definitely stay away from things that aren't on your own domain, right? So like a typepad.com blog, or blogger.com, blogspot.com, you don't want to do that, because you want to own the domain and you want that SEO juice to be flung back to, to a website that you own. In addition, you don't want to use a subdomain. So if you have, yourcompany.com, you don't want it to be blog.yourcompany.com, because then it splits all the link juice between two domains, essentially. All the link juice goes to your blog.company.com, and then kind of the new content parsing by Google, it comes to your website and spiders your site, and you want it to do the whole site frequently. You don't just want it to go to this subdomain. So you want it to be more like yourcompany.com/blog is where you want to install it. And so while it doesn't matter, I mean, you could just do flat HTML, like Mike said, WordPress does tend to have, they have a really good ecosystem of not only SEO articles of how to do really easy SEO with WordPress, but there's some awesome plugins. And the best one that I've seen recently, I used to use All-in-One SEO, but I think that Yoast's WordPress SEO plugin is actually beating that out now, just in terms of the features and the configurability and kind of the ease of use. So if you search for WordPress SEO by Yoast, you'll get to that page. And I mean, that's the ideal setup. If you have infinite choice and you have a Linux box with MySQL on it, then I would do the WordPress install with WordPress SEO by Yoast. If that doesn't work out for you, it doesn't matter that much, as long as you can do all of the basic on-page factors and get the decent URLs and a subdirectory, like I said earlier. If you have a question or comment, call it into our voicemail number, 888-801-9690, or email it to us at questions@startupsfortherestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to this podcast in iTunes by searching for Startups or via RSS at startupsfortherestofus.com, where you'll also find a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.